This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Margie Dennis,
Stuart Perks,
and Vicky, and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So, hello Margie.
Hello Vicky Marie. Hello Stuart.
You've shared with us some amazing experiences in your life, and we were talking last week about Afghanistan as well. Do you want to talk to us a little bit more about your work there and the people that you're working with?
I'd like to talk about some of the wonderful ladies that I had as home helpers. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about three ladies. The first lady was when I went to Mazar-i-Sharif after my language study and employed a lady to come in each day. We, from a New Zealand point of view, it's very hard to say you have servants, but when you have no electricity and no, just everything takes so long that you really do need someone to help you along the way. So in Mazar-i-Sharif, I had two gas burners on which I cooked. And it was bottled gas. And nowhere I lived in Afghanistan did I ever have electricity. So this lady that came to sweep and clean was remarkable. I remember an incident where I bought meat, and that was not something I did often, but you bought it, you either took a piece of newspaper or a plate on which to put the meat from when the butcher carved it off the side of the beast that was hanging on the roadside. Just meat and bone, you got the lot. And unless you took a plate or you took some newspaper to wrap it in, you carried it home on the palm of your hand because he had nothing to put it in.
And you'd buy it early in the morning before the flies
came
out?
Yes, that's right. But what really upset me was when I cut off the gristle and the fat in a way I would do in New Zealand to cook it, my cleaning lady asked if she could take it home. She had a husband and four children. That humiliated me tremendously because I should have given her the meat. Kept the gristle and the fat myself.
But it's another explanation, though, for hiring those people, because it's not you're using servants. You're actually helping some of the people there have opportunities they wouldn't have.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Well, one night when in fighting in Mazar, her husband had received a bullet that went right through his thigh, came in the window, went right through his thigh and exited his upper leg again. But that there was what we could do for them was all that could be done. You know, it's not as though you take the person off to the casualty department of the local hospital and they're looked after. Nothing is free for people. Now, eventually, we had to leave Mazar because of looting and fighting. But of course, she has to stay behind with her husband and children. And the next thing I know, she turns up in Peshawar. Now, Peshawar is Pakistan. They had come all the way from the north of Afghanistan through Afghanistan and had finally got to Peshawar, they only had what they wore. They had nothing else. They could not carry bags with them. But her ethnicity was Hazara, and Hazaras are hated in Afghanistan, and they had to flee. But they couldn't carry a thing with them because it would then be known that they were leaving.
Yes, yes.
So they just got on a bus with what they wore. And I was able to give them the money to help them move on to where some of their community was in Pakistan. They went back, and in my latter years, she was doing the most beautiful handwork and selling it. Some of these people are so gifted.
Is that cloth stitching?
Yes, cloth stitching.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, cloth stitching.
Embroidery.
Yeah. Really, they do magnificent embroidery, and that's how many of the women earned their money. So when I left Afghanistan, she and her family were doing better. I should say that when I left Mazar and knew I couldn't go back there, I left her everything in my house. I mean, I couldn't do any. All the sitting toe shacks, like caravan squabs, that's what you sit on in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And they all have nice pillows behind them.
Yeah.
All the curtains, everything was for her. But what good did it do them? Because they had to leave too.
Yes.
Not even clothes could they carry. So I have no idea what happened to all
they
those
might
things.
Have, would they have wealth in jewellery and so on that they could? Because gold would be something.
Perhaps to some extent, but I got the impression they had nothing.
Yes.
Then after I lived in Mazar, I came to Peshawar, that is Pakistan, and because of the Red Cross, I could get from there, with the courtesy of the flights that went each day, I could travel for free into Afghanistan and out again. I might stay 2 weeks in one place and then the Red Cross would bring me back to Peshawar.
Right.
I lived in Peshawar actually for 6 years and went in and out. Now, the home helper I had there was an absolutely remarkable woman. She came with the house, and when I say that, I rented the house off a Pakistani reasonably wealthy family, but they said and they were moving to live near a family in Islamabad, and they said, if you take this place, this lady goes with the house. So I inherited a live-in helper. Now, that lady's background was that she was illiterate, she had married as a young woman, and when she'd given birth to a son, and when she was pregnant with the second child, her husband died. She lived with the in-laws, as is usual. You move into your husband's family, and it is often happens that when a husband dies, the young wife is blamed. He grew up as our son, he was healthy, he's married you, and he dies. It's your fault. Now, they seemingly wanted her to die too. And in her terrible grief, largely pregnant, she was making tea one day, very soon after the husband died, and her synthetic material in her clothing caught on fire from the gas, and she was very badly burnt, but she was not taken to hospital by the family. They hoped she would die. And eventually a neighbour took her to hospital, and she recovered, very badly scarred all down one side of her body. Then, when she didn't die, they wanted her to marry her husband's drug-addicted brother. And she was not going to do that because she knew that he was a drug addict and couldn't provide for her. So she sent the children to her mother in another town, and one morning when she heard the call to prayer, without shoes, she ran away. And she was taken in by the by a woman running a nursery school, and she got a job as an ayah. She changed the diapers of the little children, and she helped there. Now, my owner, my landlady in Peshawar, was a friend of the owner of the nursery school. And the owner of the nursery school told her about this plucky young woman that had had the courage to run away. And the landlady said, "I will give her a home." And she did. That's how she came to be, to come with the home. But she became a devoted helper of me. I loved her to bits. And she was then troubled while I was there because cousins of hers who were married to each other, that is how it is, were murdered for robbery. And the wife was cowering behind the husband, and the one bullet killed them both. And they left several little children. And this good woman, who was my home helper, was desperately concerned for the youngest of these children. And so I said, "Why don't you bring them to live with us here? And I will find money from New Zealand to somehow care for these children." And praise God, that happened, that money came and they were able to be cared for. And so it was not only her in the house, but two little children as well. Now, that woman to this day has gone on caring for children. Just this year, 2022, when COVID was bad, she must be nearly 60 now, took the twins of a couple that died with COVID, newborn babies. Parents died with COVID, and this woman has taken them. She's an amazing woman. And then in August of this year, they lost everything in the floods that covered a third of Pakistan. She said, she rang me up and in a video call, and I could see the terror in her eyes, that they had no shoes, no shawls, nothing. What people live through. What people live through. Now, let me quickly move to the third of these women. I saw her first standing on the corner of an alley in Kabul, covered in a burqa, but she was standing, not moving. Now, women don't stand in Pakistan, but this woman was standing, and I realized she was watching me. And a few minutes after, I went inside the gate of the house in Kabul where I was living, and in addition to my pastoral care work, I was looking after a guest house for the agency, for short-term people. Within minutes of my going in that gate, this woman came to and knocked at the gate. And she was looking for work. And because my previous home helper had left that day, I sometimes had 16 guests in the house. I had to have someone to help. So I accepted her. Now, what she went through in the time she worked for me. On one occasion, one of her little children was disappeared. She went to get the bread baked because you mix it in your home and then you take it to a local place where they bake it. And she didn't return. And the first I knew about that was when the cleaning lady turned up at the guest house at about 6:30 in the morning, beside herself because the child was missing.
How old was the child?
About 9. And they went, she got a photo of the child from me because the police were asking for a photo of the child. And praise God, again, the police took this woman in a police car and they found the child and others en route to the airport where they were going to be taken and sold for body parts.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we do not know the hell of life. Yeah. This woman's husband had gone missing in the days of the Taliban, I think. I'm just trying to think. He'd gone missing anyway. She didn't know whether he was dead or alive, and she had about 4 children. And she paid for her rent with her body, for the rent of a room to keep her 4 children. Her husband eventually came back, accepted the child she'd given birth to in the meantime, and then he died while she worked for me. She had to come and borrow a black scarf because she didn't have anything for wearing when people came to grieve for the funeral. I helped her get a new place to live, a new room. There were 2 rooms and she subletted one, but the woman she sublet to couldn't pay any rent because she had nothing. And I brought back to New Zealand with me something that the only thing that woman possessed that she could give in the way of rent was the bowl and jug which traditionally people used to wash their hands when they were guests. A child in the house would come round with a jug and a bowl and pour water over your hands. And a beautiful custom. And this woman, that was all she could pay her rent with. Again, the struggle. Should I take this? This is the only thing this woman's got. But otherwise, if you don't accept something, they she should be paying rent.
Yes.
Terrible dilemmas.
Yes.
So, yes. I don't know. Yes, I don't know how to describe the agony of Afghanistan.
Yes.
I really don't. Anyway, I felt right about leaving it. After 10 years and a bit, I was going to be 65. And I felt it was time to come back. And I came to Palmerston North. Not that I'd ever lived here before, but I'm very glad I came. I'd been an Aucklander when I'd been in New Zealand. But Palmerston North is much less hectic. I had surrogate family here, and I knew I could be of use to them, and that's why I chose to come. I never thought I'd ever see another Afghan. That was not, I wasn't relieved about that. That was just how life was. But blow me down if some of the interpreters were not housed in Afghanistan. And I met them, and once
Interpreters from Afghanistan who'd worked with the
New Zealand
troops.
Yes.
And then they came here.
Yes, because they were in fear of their lives if they stayed. And we housed in New Zealand 30 families, I think. Some went to Hamilton and some came here. And none of them remain in Palmerston North. They've all liked the big city and they've all gone to Auckland. But Them being here paved the way for Palmerston North to receive refugees.
Ah.
And that's how the refugees first came, I think.
Really, it was that recent?
Mm-hmm.
Because
oh,
there
yes.
were Vietnamese refugees.
Oh, I don't mean that. Refugees in general. I mean Afghan refugees.
Oh, the Afghan.
No,
yeah.
We have a hugely long history.
Yes,
go to Te Papa and see the permanent display of refugee involvement in New Zealand. It's wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. But no, I think our first refugees, Afghan refugees, came probably as late as 2015 or 16. The only way really to get involved at the ground level is to work with the Red Cross, who had the mandate to resettle refugees in Palmerston North. They had other nationalities too, a large number. I think we now have something like 70 Afghan families here in Palmerston North.
They've come in
waves over the years, and I've been privileged to be deeply involved with some of those families and have loved that. It's a great, great privilege. And to have a little bit of the language so you can introduce yourself. And it feels like some port in a storm when everything is so different.
So new for them is coming back.
Well, you can understand the difference for them here.
I can.
I think, was it in English Language Partners, the idea, you try to teach them English and you're talking about something like doing the laundry or something, and as you've already said, where they came from, they wouldn't have those facilities, those things wouldn't mean anything to them. Yeah.
And something that's saddened me greatly, very recently, is a lot of the adults who come have had no education in Afghanistan at all, completely illiterate. Now, when they if you are literate in Afghanistan, the books you have start from the back and you work to the front. So people, there's a dear lady that I see now, and in learning to write her name or any word, sometimes she's writing starting at the back of the book, and sometimes she's starting writing at the front, and upside down. It doesn't matter which way. It's just that there is no concept of what a book is like. Really, really hard for the older people coming here. The young ones will do well, but the older people, it's just plain hard.
Well, in one way, I suppose the refugees coming here from Afghanistan would have come fairly quickly from their life back in Afghanistan, whereas some of the refugees had had from other countries had had 20 years in refugee camps.
These people, some of the Afghans have been in other countries. Some have been in Indonesia. They would have got there by people smugglers who we think are evil. I mean, we it's not an occupation we despise people smugglers. And yet they're lifesavers for these people.
Well, like you were saying with your helpers, for those people they have to make a living somehow in a difficult world.
And others have been in Pakistan for some few years, but that was no better because they're not allowed to open bank accounts, they're not allowed to access education for free, they're not allowed... Oh, life is hard. They're not wanted in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and one of them...
So even the... this would be not paying... They wouldn't have any of their own people in Pakistan?
Some, yes, they would. In a place like Quetta, yes, there's a large Afghan population in Quetta, but still they don't have bank accounts, they don't have citizenship, they don't have any of the things that make you belong. And here I think one of the wonderful things is to hear them said at the POFRI that welcomes them at Te Manawa. you are welcome here. This is your home. Now, that makes me want to cry to think that we really can give people a home where they're wanted.
And what that really means for them from their experiences.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Margie, what a rich life. I mean, you went over to Afghanistan and Pakistan to help people and do pastoral care, but I would expect that, I suspect that the care, the love that they've given you and the journey of your life is so rich from the gifts. You talk about the bowl and the jug, but actually in your heart, what they've given you and the memories, and equally so, the love you've given them.
Yes, I have had a rich, full life, and I'm very grateful to God for that. And the fact that I'm getting old, you only need to look at trees that lose their leaves in winter. That's an absolutely natural thing to happen. I'm slow now. You know, it takes me three times as long to make a recipe as the preparation says. And I'm still enjoying life to the full.
And you're still with the you're still with the people too. You know, the fact that your work is continuing on, and that you're being with them in the Palmerston North community too. That is
so
special.
One would hope. Yes.
Yeah, that is so special.
Yes, indeed.
Special lady. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
I'd love talking.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.